Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, and everybody managed to snap up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb to help the economy at the behest of our Prime Minister John Key, who used to work for the Federal Reserve on Wall Street. It's a small, small world we live in, isn't it? Especially when there's only 4 million people in your country. My very special guest right now is the owner of a pig farm called Baker's Green Acres. I've forgotten his name already. Welcome to the show, mate, whoever you are.
Hey, how you doing, Vinny? This is Mark Baker.
Mark Baker. All right. I'm glad to have you with us, my good pal and chum and various other nice adjectives. Colleague Pam Killeen recommended, demanded that I get you on the show. And I very rarely watch videos or do any research on my guests. Your video I did watch about what's happening with your pig farm there. So I probably can't explain it quite as well as you could. So, Mark, go ahead.
Well, let's see. My farm is not just a pig farm. We raise beef, pork, and chicken, and then we do produce, and we also do some educational classes and things like that. What happened was in 2011, December time frame, we were told that the state of Michigan, I'm here in the USA, state of Michigan was declaring war on feral pigs. And then they gave a description of what a feral pig looks like. They gave 9 characteristics. And the pigs that I raise, they're a heritage breed. They happen to be called Mangalitsa pigs. They come out of Hungary. Those pigs had at least 6 of the characteristics, and it's debatable maybe there was 7 or 8 of them. And so I contacted the state agency that had declared war on them, and I said that, gee, my pigs have those characteristics, but clearly my pigs are not feral, and there must be some mistake. And they said, well, there's going to be a meeting in Grayling, Michigan, which is 2 hours from me, in February of 2012, and you could go to that and get things straightened out. So I did go to that, and there was probably 50 other farmers there. And we were met at the door by an armed officer, and there was 2 more armed officers in the room. And we were pretty much told to sit down and shut up and listen to the briefing that they gave. And they told us that if we wanted to bring pictures of our animals they would let us know if we could keep them or not. And I didn't bring any pictures of my animals. But we were given this briefing, and then they didn't allow any questions. They told us that we would just have to comply with the regulation, and if we had pigs that were feral, that we needed to depopulate our pigs by the first day of April of 2012. What I did was, I'm former military, I'm former U.S. military. I decided that the order that they had given was not constitutional, and therefore it was an unlawful order, illegal order, and I chose to not follow the order. And I told them that I would not follow it. And if they wanted to arrest me, then they would have to do that. So April 1st came and went. We sent all the children away from the farm, sent my wife away from the farm, because my state has a pretty good reputation of armed raids on farms. And they didn't show. They didn't show up. And we are in a court case with them now, and the stakes have elevated. There's a lot of people that are on our side because they realize the implications of this. And for your listening audience, I just want to say this is really not about pigs. This is about personal property rights. You know, if the state can declare something is illegal at any point, then really none of the possessions that we have are safe from the state if they choose to declare it illegal, whether it's unsafe or whatever like that.
You'll love this, then. In New Zealand, they're talking about making domestic cats illegal.
Well, you know, they should, Vinny, really, because I'm in the state of Michigan, and you probably know Detroit is not doing too well these days because of the auto industry. It's pretty well shut down. And people leave Detroit, and they leave their animals behind, like their dogs. And the dogs become feral, and they've got a tremendous feral dog problem in Detroit. Well, by the same way of thinking, you know, if they're going to go after farms, thinking that we're the source of feral pigs, then they should probably go after homeowners who have pet dogs and say, we need to get rid of all those because they could become feral.
You know, see, me personally, I think that the pigs in uniform are the feral ones most of the time.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know, they've really strayed from where we came from, the land of the free and the home of the brave.
So you also had an element within your video where you explained how the Soviet Union tried to control food in such a way.
Well, what I was explaining, I was trying to draw a parallel between the blockade of Berlin after World War II and the Michigan Department of Natural Resources is now blockading my farm, right? They don't want a fair fight with us. So what they've done, you know, we're willing to go to court with them and have a judge hear it, maybe a jury of our peers, and decide whether what they're doing is fair or not. So they've put it off and put it off and put it off, and now we're told that it will be until next November that we get to go to court with them. So then what they did is they made it very difficult for us to ship animals because I have to go through a local veterinarian to get a health certificate in order to ship the animals from state to state. And they've leaned on the veterinarians to identify our pigs as feral, and therefore we cannot ship them across state lines. And some vets have complied with the state and some have not. And the ones that have not are also locked up with the state now in legal wrangling. Then the next thing that they did was they went to the slaughtering facilities where we would take pigs, because if we're going to take pigs from the farm to a slaughtering facility, I don't need any health certificate, because at the slaughtering facility they have a veterinarian there and they say whether the animal's healthy or not. And the veterinarians at the slaughtering facilities are not allowing animals in that they say are feral, and they base that feralness on a description. And if we were to look up feral in Webster's dictionary, we'd see that a feral pig or a feral animal or a feral child is one that is not under the direct husbandry or supervision of human beings. So there's no way that a pig that's on my farm that I'm shipping could be feral, but yet the state has given these veterinarians at the slaughter facilities a new description of the word feral. You know, the whole thing is very, very Marxist. They are trying to confuse people and keep us off balance with, you know, this, you know, whether it's a pig with a floppy tail or a pig with a straight tail. But bottom line, a pig that is raised under the husbandry of human beings cannot be feral by definition, so it shouldn't happen. So anyway, the blockade is I can't move my animals to slaughter, and I can't sell them across state lines. So I am effectively blockaded. And I was trying to draw a parallel between, you know, what's happening on our farm and what happened during the blockade of Berlin after World War II, where the Soviets would not allow Allied troops to bring food in to the people of Berlin. And they wanted the people of Berlin to rely on the Soviet Union for their food and therefore, you know, be under their control. And so what the Allies did was they got together and they started flying supplies in. It's called the Berlin Airlift. And I've called on my friends to help me out, to help us through this blockade until we can get to the court. And so far, the American people have risen to the occasion, and we still have all of our animals, or most of them, and we're still feeding them and still carrying on our farming operation, which is, I think it's paramount, because if the state can choke us out and we, you know, we're forced to sell the farm and move to town, then I don't have any standing in a court of law, and I think that's what they want. You know, they're not, they're definitely bullies. They're not playing fair, for sure.
You're aware, Mark, of the Agenda 21 program, right?
How's that? Can you say that again?
Are you aware of the Agenda 21 program to get all the local farmers and stuff like that off the land?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know about that. When this first started, I had people telling me, oh, this is Agenda 21, and, you know, I didn't know anything about it, and I thought, well, you know, this is another conspiratorial type thing, and I just said, I don't have time for that. You know, we just need to get these idiots out of our way. But as time has gone by, I've had to go and look at the Agenda 21 document, and I still have people on my side that are saying, no, it isn't Agenda 21, and ignore that. But it really is, because, like, in our case, they call it the declaratory ruling, by the way, and it's the invasive species order. That came up under a previous administration in the state of Michigan. We had a Democrat governor. And when the Republicans took over, this was a controversial issue, and not good. It's not good for a new governor to have controversial issues on his desk when he takes office. And normally what they do is they just push him in the wastebasket. It's like, we don't want to deal with this. But the Republican governor that took over, his name is Rick Schneider, took this issue on and even appointed somebody to ramrod it and make it happen. So I now believe that he is doing this because to break step with Agenda 21 is political suicide, not from the constituency of the citizenry of the United States, but from the controlling powers that want to make Agenda 21 reality. So, yeah, I would have to say that I do believe at this point this is Agenda 21.
And have you had any offers by major corporations to, you know, take the farm off your hands and make this all easy for you?
No, I haven't. No, but
if you did have a big offer, would you take it?
Well, that's a hypothetical question. I never faced that yet. No, I don't think I would. I don't think I would because I'm former military and I took an oath to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States. That's what I plan to do.
Yeah, and that includes private property, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't be much of a country if it was run by the corporations.
Well, I guess it is run by the corporations at the moment. Yeah, there's just kind of a little bit of wiggle room in there.
Yeah, they are taking control, aren't they?
Yeah, it's a real problem, don't you think, that when you try to make a living, you try to be honest, you try to be decent, and the people who you think are supposed to actually, you know, enforce the law and protect rights and that kind of thing, law enforcement, courts, government, essentially, sometimes you realize that actually they're the ones trying to break the law, even though they're the ones passing it, and they're the criminals who need to be arrested. I was just thinking about this before coming on the air today. What if a cop came up to me and tried to arrest me for no good reason? And I said to him, look, mate, you're breaking the law right now, and I'm going to arrest you. I'd actually have to physically overpower the guy, but you can't. You just taser me.
Yeah.
It's a real sad situation, man.
I don't think they've achieved their goal yet because... And here's why I think that they haven't gotten there yet. I think there's still a lot of hope. It's because people are starting to understand what's going on more and more and more. Shows like this are on all the time. And it really doesn't take a whole lot of people to dig their heels in and say no. Because when one guy does, then another guy does, and then another, and so on. And I'm from New England. I'm from Shrewsbury, Massachusetts. That's where I grew up. And as a young guy, you're taught about the revolution over and over and over. And just recently, just a week ago, I was back to New England, and I went to the North Bridge, and I got to see where the shot heard around the world was fired. And in researching that whole time in our American history, you know, you realize that this isn't the first time that American citizens have been lulled to sleep and tried to...
We'll be right back. No one's gonna take me alive. The time has come to make things right. You and I must fight for our rights. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and scumbaggery and people trying to steal everything that you've got, even though they don't frickin' deserve it, with a sense of entitlement, if you lose your sense of humour, you go frickin' nuts. My very special guest is, I believe it's Mark Baker from Baker's Green Acres, and we're talking about how, essentially, they're trying to stop him from selling his pigs off, which is kind of just total breach of the Constitution. And I'm acting under the assumption that there's an awful lot of police status type measures or sort of like weird court instances, you know, where you'll go to court and it's just you, but for some reason there's an awful lot of armed people around. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I think you're referring to a court case that we had in Sheboygan. This was last March, and I showed up at the courthouse at 8 o'clock. We were scheduled for 9, and we were kind of amazed that we had to walk through metal detectors on the way in. Now, Sheboygan is a real small town, and that time of year, there's hardly anybody there. So it's not like being in a big city where, you know, there's a lot of bad things going on. Nothing happens in Sheboygan. So we walked in, and we had to go through metal detectors. There was several sheriff's department guys standing there, and then there was four state policemen, and then there was these other guys that were there that were in civilian clothes, and they were all tattooed up and beards and everything. But and they were standing apart, but then I noticed they'd stand close enough that they could talk to each other, and I looked them over real good, and I could tell that they were carrying weapons, and they had bulletproof jackets on and all that stuff. So there was five of them, and when we were in the courtroom, there was at least two of those guys within 6 feet of me at all times. Now, we're just farmers. I'm 52 years old, so I don't think I present, you know, a terribly menacing image. And the other guys that I'm in this court case with, they're in their 60s. So, and we were disarmed going in, so I don't think we weren't there to duke it out at the OK Corral. If we were, I don't think we would have gone to court. But we counted at any one time in the courtroom at least 8 guns. The people from the Department of Natural Resources, there were 17 of them, and there was at least 6 armed at all times. So, yeah, that was an enlightening experience. Oh, yeah, and a bomb dog, too. That was kind of interesting. All for pigs, right?
Yeah, maybe they were afraid they were carrying a swine flu bomb or something.
Maybe. Hey, you know, I got cut off before. And the point that I want to make is we spend a lot of time complaining about this, and then we go to the people who are taking our liberties away, and we say, hey, don't do this. And that it's not working, because they're not, you know, if they're going to take your liberties from you, they're not about to stop taking your liberties just because you say you want them to stop
yeah.
taking.
There's not an or else that they have to be afraid of, is there?
Well, I think my experience in this has been these people are cowards, and they're relying on citizens to just say, okay, and then, you know, go watch TV. But I think if people are concerned about their liberties being taken away, they need to be willing to just dissent and do what they know is right, and then pay the consequences. And if that means that you're going to get arrested, so be it. Then you go to court, you have a jury of your peers, and that's the way that goes. Now, I'm former military, did 20 years in the Air Force, and I know how things work. If you're given an order that is illegal and unlawful, your duty is to not carry that order out, or to refuse an unlawful order. And then you would be court-martialed, and there would be people there that are your peers, and they would decide whether what you did was proper according to the Uniform Code of Military Justice. That's what we're under in the military, or not proper. And if you are court-martialed, you know, I think a lot of people think a court-martial is your worst enemy. But in reality, if you're given an order, let's say you're given an order to shoot civilians, and you refuse to carry that order out, the person that gave you that order, they're the ones that will hang, not you. Now, in this case, I've been ordered to shoot my pigs, and I've refused that order. And so we're saying, let's go to court. Now, we're going to find out who gave that order, and if it's an unlawful order, I will not be held accountable for refusing an unlawful order. But the person who gave that order, they will be held accountable. And they cannot do that. They cannot order us to depopulate our animals based on, you know, the fact that our animals are feral, because they're obviously not. So we're not done here, you know, and I think we've taken the right course of action in refusing an unlawful order.
Now, in terms of other tactics and things like that, have they done anything else to you other than bring you into court or anything? You said that they haven't raided the property or anything, have they?
No, not directly. One night, my 15-year-old son came in the house wild-eyed. We live out in the perimeter quite far, and there's no one around us. And he came in wild-eyed, and he said, "There are men in the woods." And so at the time, I happened to have a broken leg. I went down there as quickly as I could to where I could see them. And sure enough, there was two individuals in the wood line that were approaching our animals. And they were definitely on our property. And so I went back to the house. I got my pickup truck and a phone and a flashlight. And I raced out the driveway. By the time I got to the bottom of the driveway, they were at the corner, but I could see them pretty good, and it was a newer black SUV, like a Suburban or something like that, and I couldn't catch them. They were really moving, and I'm not sure whether they were just trying to draw me off or what, but when we called the sheriff's department, they didn't show up for an hour, and then the sheriff wasn't interested in pursuing it at all. They just said that, well, it was probably just kids, you know, looking for a place to take a leak or something like that. But I don't buy that at all. I think it was definitely people from one of these organizations that was coming in just to probe us and see what
our reaction. My first assumption is the FBI trying to scare you or intimidate you into stopping doing what you're doing.
Yeah, probably just to see what we'd do. And then the next thing that was a little bit over the top, I thought, was, again, it happened that it was 10:30 at night. My oldest daughter and I, she's 11, we went out to the pigs to shut the water off. This is in the summertime. The sun's up quite high until 9:30, so this was just getting dark. And a platform, it looked like a helicopter. You know, we couldn't really see it. We could just see the light on it. It was coming towards us at a very strange angle. And we just stood there and watched it, expected to hear the noise, you know, from the rotors. But there was absolutely no noise. And it came right over our swine area, our pig area. No noise at all. And there was one red navigational light on it that was on the top, and then we could see the propellers on the top of it, and it was some sort of platform, and then it kind of swiveled around and kind of as if it was looking at us, and we were just standing there looking at it, and then it went off and gained altitude and went out of sight. And I mentioned it to a friend of mine that's up on stuff like that, and he said it was a drone, and sure enough, I got on the internet and I found something that looked similar to it. So that was another thing that they did, and we thought maybe they just wanted to get a count on our animals to make sure that we weren't shipping them off.
See, this is the kind of thing that you'd expect in a George Orwell novel, isn't it?
Yeah, I actually think these people are using the George Orwell 1984 as an instructional guide. I think they think that's what they should do. But, you know, again, I got to tell you, I don't think these people are very courageous people. You know, how many stones does it take to fly a drone over a farmer's place? Or, you know, send in a couple guys to probe the place and then just run out. They don't want to go head-to-head with us in court because they'll lose. And I don't know. These are state employees. You know, they're just doing what they're told. They all want to go home and enjoy their lives. I don't think they really want to do this. They're being pushed to do this by by big agriculture is who's putting them up to it.
How do you know it's big ag putting them up to it?
Well, because we conducted depositions in the August time frame. And the Department of Natural Resources has cited two individuals as their experts in creating the declaratory ruling. One guy's name is Dr. Bates, and the other guy's name is Mr. Guthrie. And we deposed these individuals, put them on the stand under oath, The whole thing was recorded and videoed. I have the transcripts of it, and I was in the room when it happened. And both individuals stated that they knew that they were cited as experts on this case by the Department of Natural Resources, but they both said they didn't know why. Because as far as they knew, they had been invited to a feral swine working group, and they were invited by a man by the name of Sam Hines. And Sam Hines is the vice president of the Michigan Pork Producers Association, which is a lobbying group that lobbies for the huge agribusiness firms that you know, have these big hog houses where there's 5,000 pigs in a house, and they stink the neighborhood up, and they create pork that's unhealthy to eat. They have to use a bunch of stuff to make them grow and all that stuff. I think you know what I'm talking about. And
yeah.
So the Feral Swine Working Group in the state of Michigan was created by Michigan pork producers. And when we looked further into that, we found that there was documentation, and I have this documentation, that shows that the Michigan pork producers were supported by several other entities. One was Michigan Milk Producers, another one was Michigan Poultry, Michigan Soy, Michigan Corn, Greenstone Farm Credit Services. They're the guys that hold the money. You know, they get federal dollars, and then they decide who they're going to loan it out to. So like a small farmer like me that's diversified, kind of like your grandpa's farm, they don't loan money to guys like me. They'll only loan guys that are money to guys that are doing the what they call CAFO systems, and that's concentrated animal feeding operations. And that is very much Agenda 21 orientated, because in Agenda 21, they want all animals what they call under roof, and that means they're, you know, basically raised inside like you house prisoners. So that's how I know that agribusiness is behind this.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens. I think large corporations, they lobby government so that they can wipe out the smaller competitions through use of force. So, you know, that's basically what's going on here. Unfortunately, we're coming very close to the end of this interview now, and you're asking for help and donations, even restaurants to give you scraps and everything like that. If you could give out your websites and locations where people could do that, I'd be much obliged.
Yeah, thanks. My website is bakersgreenacres.com, and our phone number's on there and all that stuff. Yeah, that'd be real helpful.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, understand that this is probably not just happening to this lovely man here. This is probably happening all over the place. And I think that what you said earlier is, well, basically it usually just takes one person to stand up and then other people start standing up. So, you know, it's pretty important to support the people who are actually putting it on the line and not backing down. And I salute you for what you're doing, mate.
Thanks, Vinny.
Okay.
Thank you. So I got another minute?
We've got about 20 seconds, 30 seconds.
All right. Well, I just got to say that these guys are so powerful that they have found a way into the court system. And you're not only fighting these big entities, you're also fighting the court system too.
All right. Mark Baker from bakersgreenacres.com. If you are anywhere near the area, or if you have any spare cash or food scraps or something of that nature, please go to the website, contact them via phone or email. The details are right there, and give him the support that he needs so he can continue this fight against the monopolistic forces of scumbaggery in America. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.